Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering Kingston's new Shop Local campaign.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Kingston City Council unanimously voted in favor of a motion to develop a Shop Local campaign. This motion is specifically in opposition to the proposed 25% tariffs on Canadian goods by the United States. Councillor Wendy Stephen brought forward the motion.
It's up to us to remind ourselves just how awesome it is to be a part of this community. And let's work together to keep our town vibrant. Let's rally around our local business owners and let's shop local.
Councillor Stephen emphasized the urgency of supporting local businesses, a sentiment shared by many councillors during the discussion. Council also dove into the broader context of these U.S. trade policies.
We've all heard the comments about Canada becoming the 51st state and how President Trump thinks that Canada is not viable as a country. And I think we need to be crystal clear here that Canada will never be the 51st state. This is what the U.S. is trying to do. They are trying to use tariffs to bully us into becoming the 51st state because we have things that they want. Only it's not lunch money, it's natural resources.
Councillor Brandon Tozo, who seconded the motion, echoed these sentiments.
This motion is very near and dear to my heart, and I really share the feelings of many Canadians of a profound betrayal by the Trump administration. As Councillor Stephen mentioned, we're being told that Canada is going to become the 51st state. That's not happening. Over my dead body.
Councillor Connie Glenn also pointed out that many businesses are just now bouncing back from the impact of the pandemic. And this added pressure only makes it more challenging.
So we've got businesses that are just getting into the stage of recovery after the pandemic. So to be hit by this, I think, is just another slap in the face. So anything that we can do to support them really matters.
The motion also has an element of advocacy to upper levels of government, calling for the removal of interprovincial trade barriers. Councillors Gregory Ridge and Vincent Shinani highlighted the practical importance of community support in this time.
If we're looking at the percentage of our workforce in Kingston who work in retail trade, it's approximately 12% of our workforce. If we're looking at people who work in accommodation and food services, it's approximately 10%. So you have 22% of our labor market that could be potentially affected just off the hop when we're talking about economic effects there, won't go into manufacturing or anything. And so I think a campaign to support local businesses right now is of the utmost importance. I think that it's not just something that we can do in a flag-waving, patriotic kind of way, but it's something that we need to do as a careful, focused economic strategy to help people in this time, because there will be changes. They may likely in the immediate be negative, and we need to be there to support each other.
When you support local businesses, they're the ones who, if they succeed, they're the ones who give back to the community. They're the ones who donate. They're the ones who sponsor sports teams. They're the ones who do a lot of like the community work because they care about the community. So the more we support them, the more they support the community. And regardless of tariffs and all that, this is just the thing that we should all be doing, regardless of what's going on in the world.
Mayor Brian Patterson provided the final comment of the night, noting that mayors south of the border have also been involved in discussions with neighboring Ontario municipalities.
It's just surreal that we're having to have this conversation, but I appreciate the motion. Certainly, I absolutely encourage everyone in our community to go out to support local, to shop local, to encourage visits to Kingston. The other thing I will say is that there are conversations that are happening among mayors, not only on this side of the border, but there are conversations that are happening with some of my colleagues south of the border as well. Because there are many border communities to the south of us that are being absolutely negatively impacted by what's going on right now. And we do have allies.
A copy of the motion will be sent to stakeholders, including Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and various business associations, urging them to take action.
While all of this is out of our control, we know that at least by supporting Kingston's local economy, that is supporting Canada's economy. And that is actually within our control. So, leaving here tonight, let's shop local, let's show our businesses some love, and let's get lots of tourists here to do exactly the same.
Kingstonians can expect to see an official Shop Local campaign launching soon. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that story. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about the federal government's pledge to invest $3.4 million into Ontario's life science sector.
Thank you, Jesse. On Wednesday, February 19th, the Honourable Ruby Sahota, Minister of Democratic Institutions and Minister responsible for the Federal Economic Development Agency for Southern Ontario, or FedDev, announced an investment of $3.4 million to support the development of life sciences companies in Southern Ontario. In her announcement, Sahota explained that Kingston is home to some of Canada's leading research and education institutions like Queen's University and the Royal Military College, with a long history of innovation in life sciences. As a key part of Canada's economic success, she said, the Government of Canada is investing in the life sciences sector and the organizations, as well as local businesses in regions across the country that support them, to ensure they have the tools they need to succeed now and in the future. The organization will offer the Kingston Life Sciences and Helix funding initiatives and establish a new wet lab space at Providence Care Hospital, with targeted programming to support life sciences entrepreneurs and by filling a regional need for wet lab space. Kingston Economic Development Corporation will also help local innovators boost their capabilities to meet the increasing demand for medical products that will help create a healthier future for everyone, according to the federal government. Sahota pointed out that this project is expected to support over 100 businesses. Minister Sahota also announced nearly $400,000 for the Prescott Russell Employment Services Center in Hawkesbury, a nonprofit corporation serving youth job seekers, workers, entrepreneurs, and employers in the greater Prescott Russell area. The center assists close to 14,000 clients annually, and this investment is intended to expand its services for small and medium-sized enterprises in the region. Sahota stated that these investments in Kingston and Hawkesbury will strengthen local businesses as they grow and help the Canadian economy thrive. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with a sports report on the recent record-breaking success achieved by the Kingston Frontenacs.
Thank you, Dinah. It was lucky number 13 for the Kingston Frontenacs last weekend as the team tallied their franchise record 13th consecutive home win with a 6-3 Duke over the Niagara Ice Dogs. The Frontenacs started fast, potting 5 goals in the first 25 minutes of the game, building a commanding 5-1 lead. Though Niagara showed some fight back with a pair of goals in the late stages of the game, Kingston's Riley Clark scored his second of the game into the empty net to give the Fronts an insurmountable 3-goal lead. Offensive excellence has been the driving force behind the Frontenacs' record-setting homestand. The streak began with a 6-2 victory over the Sarnia Sting on December 8th. Since then, the team has scored 71 goals over the 13-game winning streak at Slush Puppy Place, giving the team an average goals for of 5.46 during that time. This offensive punch, combined with the steady play of veteran goalie Mason Vaccari, has helped the Fronts surge past the Brantford Bulldogs into first place in the OHL's Eastern Conference. The next Frontenacs home game is Friday, February 28th against the Windsor Spitfires, a team that actually sits 6 points ahead of Kingston in the overall OHL standings. Early March may prove to be the most consequential stretch for the team, as they have a 4-game road trip where they play 4 of the league's top 8 teams back-to-back. The Frontenacs have already clinched a berth in the OHL playoffs, but there is still a lot left to play for in the final 12 games of the season. Kingston holds a razor-thin lead over the Brantford Bulldogs and Oshawa Generals for the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. That top seed guarantees home ice advantage for the Eastern Conference playoffs. The Frontenacs are hoping that this home ice X factor could be what the team needs to finally make a prolonged playoff push and break a five-decade championship drought.
Thank you to Jesse Bell for that story. Now over to LJR reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about the awarding of the King's Coronation Medal to the Waterside Artistic Director, Beverly Harris.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Artistic director for the Waterside Summer Series, Beverly Harris, was presented with the King's Coronation Medal in recognition of her service and outstanding contributions to her community, Ontario, and Canada for the arts. The award was presented by Canadian Senator Peter Harder at a ceremony on February 9th at St. Paul's Church on Amherst Island. Harris has been the artistic director with the Waterside Summer Series for 20 years. The series has become well known in the area for bringing A-list performers to Amherst Island. Harris spoke with us this week and described her experience in receiving the award, as well as noting the hard work of board members.
It was a surprise, for sure. It was quite thrilling and humbling, I would have to say. And certainly credit goes to a lot of our board members, past and present, who, of course, work very hard as well. It's not just one person, of course, that pulls something off like this. I certainly share the recognition with all of the people that have worked hard with me over the last 20 years to make Waterside what it is. And our patrons and sponsors, very, very faithful. I guess the pressure on me is that they expect to hear nothing but the best.
The board handles promotion work and events postings, as well as publishing a brochure for the Waterside Summer Series. Harris describes Senator Harder's connection to the series.
Peter Harder happens to be a good friend of a couple on the island. So when she first told me that I was receiving this, I said, "Did you have something to do with this?" And she said, "Absolutely not." But because he is a good friend of theirs, he actually has attended Waterside concerts, unknown to me, and recently has become a sponsor as well.
Harris explains the unique experience for attendees of the Waterside Summer Series.
A sold-out concert is only 150 people, so it's a very up-close, intimate, personal experience, and the patrons get to schmooze with the performers after the concert as well, which doesn't always happen when you go to a concert in a large hall that seats hundreds of people.
Harris describes how they create a unique experience for performers as well.
One thing that we do for our performers is that we cover the costs of their accommodation for two nights on the island, and we provide all of their food and refreshments while they're here. After every concert, we have a buffet supper reception, which the performers absolutely love because it's like a party. And the people that are invited to that are the people that are our sponsors.
Harris notes the different sponsorship levels and how they relate to the island.
Depending on the level of their donation, they're categorized as certain kind of owls, because, of course, the island is known for its different owls that brings many birders to the island. That seems to appeal to people as well, being categorized as a certain kind of owl.
Harris describes the joy of artists coming back to play again and why they decide to do so.
I find the longer I'm doing it, the easier it seems to become to line up wonderful artists. For one thing, they like to come back, and I think it's because we treat them so well. And they realize that our audience, a few of them have said to me over the years, they can sense how the audience is paying such close attention and is really giving back to the performers.
Harris talks about the food they offer and a feature returning artist.
Often the performers say, we never get treated like this. You know, so often they get handed their check and thank you very much and goodbye, and they pick up a hamburger somewhere on the way home or whatever, I guess. But with us, it's a real groaning board and lots of wine and beer or whatever they fancy flowing as well. In fact, one of the outstanding trios that we have coming this year, the Griffin Trio, they are Canadian, but they're considered one of the finest trios in the world today, and they're coming back to us for their 7th appearance on Waterside. So they're on the front cover of our brochure this year.
Harris highlights the first children's performance they had at the Waterside Summer Series and notes another one upcoming in the future.
The majority of our audience tends to be senior citizens, although last year we had a children's concert, a free children's concert, where one of our performers that was going to be doing a full concert later in the day did a one-hour show for children. And of course, they came along with their parents or grandparents or whoever was bringing them. That was a big success, and we managed to get a grant to cover the cost of that. And we're doing it again this year with a trio that we have coming.
The free one-hour children's concert will take place on August 19th at 11:15 a.m. The Poulenc Trio will then put on a full concert at 3:15 in the afternoon. More information and the full schedule of performances can be found on the Waterside Summer Series website. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE Prince Edward County, Brenda Little, with a story about the textile takeover event at Prince Edward County's historic Macaulay House.
I'm watching Victoria Braith work her magic on the weaving loom, creating a unique piece of fabric that will be made into a dish towel. Victoria is one of several local textile artists filling the historic Macaulay House in Picton, demonstrating their craft at the Textile Takeover event. It is part of the Flashback February lineup, taking place throughout Prince Edward County during the entire month. Victoria tells me about her craft.
My name is Victoria Braith.
And how long have you been weaving?
For about 3 years. That's it, I know. I started weaving when I was doing a PhD in philosophy. I was doing something based on process and relations, and all that I was reading used a lot of weaving metaphors. And since I was already wanting to express this philosophy through art, I started weaving and I just really fell in love. And so how weaving works is that you set up a certain structure, and with your feet you're doing actions, and as I'm going through and making fabric like the old traditional way, I feel like I am just sort of shaping the universe, working. It's very meditative, so I get into a flow, and so it's sort of making music, but that has a material thing in the end.
As I walk around the house, there's a faint smell of wood fire and the sweet scent of hot apple cider coming from the kitchen. We watch as Bay Woodyard is dyeing wool using a centuries-old technique. She tells us about it.
Yeah, so natural dyeing existed for, you know, hundreds and thousands of years before the synthetic dyes that we use now. And so there is a historical record of how those dyes are made and what is used to make the dyes. So that's what I use the historical record to find out what will work. There's a lot of misinformation available on the internet now about natural dyes, and people think that just anything can be used as a natural dye, but that's not the case. So you can waste a lot of time and materials trying to get something that will never be a dye to work. So what I have here today, I decided to use some different types of dyes. So one of them is a wild foraged dye. So I've got buckthorn berries. Those are from an invasive European buckthorn that grows in the county everywhere. You can use the berries for dye, and they've been traditionally used for dye all over the world. So the buckthorn berry dye is green. And then I also have something that you can just have from around the house that works. I've got red onion skins. And so red onion skins actually don't dye red. You would think they would, but the chemistry of the onion skins actually makes them dye more of a greeny brown color. which is quite nice.
Jessica Chase is curator of the Macaulay Heritage Park that includes the house and the museum, housing the award-winning Path Forward exhibit that explores truth and reconciliation in Prince Edward County. All is part of the month-long Flashback February event, celebrating everything heritage in the county, including music, food, lectures, and interactive events. Jessica tells us more about Textile Takeover.
So Jessica, tell me about this event.
Bay and Bear are the organizers. I can certainly tell you from the museum's perspective, collaborated with them first at Gather last year, where we just out there and being able to display some of the museum's textiles. That was super fun. And so when the two of them approached us, saying that they would love to do an installation or an animation at Macaulay House, it seemed like the perfect marriage of our historic spaces, historic textiles, but also having these traditional textile arts that are still alive and well in Prince Edward County and more broadly, bringing artists who are practicing those traditions into these spaces and bringing them to life. I mean, it's just a natural fit.
I move on to the front room where there are a couple of people busy spinning wool. Debbie tells us how she got started and Joseph talks about his journey.
Do you mind if I ask you a couple of questions?
Go for it.
How did you become interested in spinning?
From a friend who is an avid spinner who has probably 6 spinning wheels, and one evening she plunked one in front of me and one in front of my friend Karen, and it's been love ever since.
Yeah. And the majority of wool that you would use, what animal would that be from?
I really like blue-faced Leicester the best, but I also like to incorporate alpaca or bison or mohair with it. Mohair gives it a bit of a halo, and alpaca gives it more warmth and softness. So they're a nice combination.
So where would you get bison?
You would buy it from a someone who supplies it. That would be that they would be a fiber supplier. There's a gal in Toronto that I buy from. Yeah.
How did you become interested in spinning?
Well, I started wanting to grow flax to make linen originally. It was my 4th season growing flax this year, and I thought, well, I better learn to actually spin it because I have no idea. So I found the County Spinners and Weavers Guild and have been a part for just over 2 years now, and I've been spinning wool in that time.
Right. What about the flax?
Yes, this year I think I'm going to finally brave it and try and spin some of it because it's a lot more difficult than wool.
Why is it more difficult?
I don't know. Well, no, it's long. Like the fibers in this wool is 4 inches long, whereas in the flax, each fiber is, some of them are over 30 inches. So it's a very different way of spinning. And it's coarser, that's right. So the preparation's different.
The Macaulay House was built in 1830, and it was so appropriate to see these textile artists working on their projects using methods that were likely part of this very historic house. I moved to the various rooms and spoke with embroidery enthusiasts, an eco-printer, award-winning quilters and rug-hooking artists, and a felt maker. It was truly evident that all of these textile artists share a love for their craft. For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE, County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over now to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN Coburg, Dan Jones, with a story about the opposition of Crammy Township residents to the proposed expansion of its gravel pit.
Residents are being very vocal in their opposition to the extension of the operation of a gravel pit in Crammy Township. The Municipal Council held a special meeting Tuesday evening to hear from residents on the expansion by Fidelity Property Group. They currently own and operate a pit on Telephone Road from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and Saturday morning. An application to the Ministry of Natural Resources seeks to expand to 24 hours Monday through Friday with the possibility of Sundays and holidays. HMBC, an urban design and landscape architectural group representing Fidelity, sent the township a letter on January 17th outlining Fidelity's intentions. That letter stated the hours of change were needed for the crucial operations of expanding Highway 401 in the region and to locate an asphalt plant to the site. Yet residents at the special council meeting spoke against the expansion, indicating the trucks traveling down the road are already too noisy. Shirley Bird is taking issue with the tailgate banging.
The noise alone of the tailgates banging is constant, which is very disruptive during the day. I can't imagine what it's going to be at nighttime with that happening all the time.
Joshua Bell, who lives right next to the gravel pit, says he can't walk his dog on their 12-acre property because the noise is too great.
I can't even walk my dog without him tucking his tail between his legs when a tailgate smashes. Not only that, the truck's going back and forth past our front window. He's on the couch all the time, whining and barking and stuff.
Speaker after speaker expressed to council their opposition to the application. Deputy Mayor Sandra Arthur stated she heard residents' concerns about the expansion. She says she could not support Fidelity's application because they have not been forthcoming with information to the township.
100%, I can't support it for the reason of the lack of information that had come forward.
Cramby Township has until Friday to submit comments on the noise aspect of Fidelity's application. That comment package, expected to include residents' emails and documents, will be considered by the provincial government. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thank you to Dan Jones for that report. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, February 27th, daytime high of 3 degrees with a 70% chance of precipitation, a mix of snow and rain, dropping down quite a bit overnight to minus 8 with a 40% chance of flurries. Friday, February 28th, minus 1 as the daytime high with a 30% chance of flurries, dropping down to minus 2 overnight. Saturday, March 1st, we're going to see a daytime high of 2 degrees with a mix of flurries and rain showers throughout the day. Moving now to Sunday, March 2nd, it'll be a little bit colder, daytime high of minus 4, overnight low of minus 13. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, March 3rd, daytime high of minus 6, overnight low of minus 16. And now it's time for the City of Kingston Traffic Report. We begin with road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Market Street, King to Ontario, is closed until February 28th for the Spirit of Winter. Here is some information on a parking disruption at the Hanson Memorial Parking Structure. The Hanson Memorial Parking Structure Restoration Project is underway. The work will take place throughout all levels of the building and will include efforts such as routine structural maintenance, repainting, replacement of waterproofing materials, and upgrades to the building's mechanical and electrical systems. The work is scheduled to conclude in July of 2025, and there are approximately 100 spaces remaining available for parkers. Lastly, here are some other delays to be aware of. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.